Hi everyone, this is Rodney Williams working with Jeff Thiege from the Baw-Baw Arts Alliance, and each month for our Artist Chat segment we interview creative people from across Gippsland, people working in a broad range of fields. Today we have with us Diane Saval, an internationally respected fibres artist. Welcome Diane.
Thank you. Thank you Rodney and Jeff.
Hi Diane, thanks for speaking with us. Rodney and I recently attended the Gathering Threads exhibition in Yanar Arc for what I can only describe as textiles on steroids. It displayed a selection of textile artists demonstrating a progressive attitude towards the medium, an event that you happen to curate and coordinate. This is the third year you've done this.
So Gathered Threads started as a result of my interest in curating. So I've been curating travelling exhibitions from the year 2000. And in 2000, we were the only Australian travelling exhibition in Europe in the Olympic year. And the response we got was absolutely amazing. Dutch Prime Minister turned up to where the exhibition was shown in Paris, was shown at the Australian Embassy in Paris, had more visitors than any other Australian exhibition. So my passion for curating grew there. And so over the years, I've collected artists, as you might say, whose work I've found really interesting and which I've found really resonates with audiences. And I've also lived in several places in Australia over that period of time and have encountered people doing different things. And so my idea with Gathered Threads was there was a space at ARC that was brilliant for showing textiles, was to invite people from different parts of my life to join in and show how fabulous textile art can be and how expressive and how inventive Australian textile artists are. So each one of the people involved is from different parts of my life. Two of the exhibitors are from the 2000 exhibition, so people I've known since then, and some of them have been more recent. And the other thing that I've been really conscious of is including some local Gippsland artists, because I found that you've got incredibly inventive people here too.
Over that period, what have you learnt?
I've learnt that textiles are capable of telling remarkable stories. I've travelled quilts widely around Europe, in the UK, even in Ireland, and I've travelled work through the Middle East at the invitation of the Australian government, and that was started a remarkable relationship with Syria in particular. And what I found was that it was able to cross boundaries, because in the Middle East, textiles isn't considered just a women's domain. It's considered as a plastic art, as they call it. So it's considered an art form, and the men come and visit the exhibitions just as much as women. And in fact, I was invited to come and speak at universities about Australian textile art, which was quite an amazing experience. So my passion has been to show work that shows some of the traditional elements of textile practice, but also does really edgy things. And I think the things that I've learnt is that you've got to have a combination of these to be really appealing to a wide range of audience. And when you exhibit, it is all about audience. And the other thing is to include local people, because people really relate to the fact that some of their artists are as accomplished as better known artists.
In recent times, you've taken up invitations to exhibit and run workshops in Europe. Could you tell us about your recent experiences in particular?
So in 2000, when I went with the initial exhibition, which was called Australian Bounty, we were the only Australian exhibition in Europe in the Olympic year. So the exhibition went to a castle in France, and the woman who ran that was passionate about the environment, and I'd started writing with her because I'd had a quilt in an exhibition 2 years prior, and she told me in 2000 she was having a friendship year. And I said to her, can I bring some Australian quilts? And she said, sure, but I want to curate with you. And so started my relationship there. So we're in this 14th 16th century castle in the Morvan region, which is near Burgundy. And we mount this exhibition of Australian quilts, and it just looked fabulous. Like, imagine sort of sandstone coloured walls and these really vibrant Australian works. And
wow.
It attracted an enormous amount of interest. We were on French television, and we'd go to the supermarket. My children at that stage were 9, 7, and 5. And we'd go to the supermarket and they'd call out, oh, the Australian princesses are here and things like that. It was just the
gorgeous.
Most remarkable experience. Because people were seeing things Australian on TV every night. Like, there was a little segment before the news highlighting things about Australian, and here we were Australian. So people came along and were just, it was a really heartwarming experience. And all of my relationships in Europe go back to that particular exhibition. And then I've created other friendships in the textile world. In Italy, I was teaching because I'd befriended this Italian woman who runs a shop in Milan. And
how did you overcome the language barrier and the distance?
Well, you know the saying, more front than Myers.
Yeah.
That's kind of me in the language stakes. I am originally Dutch, so I am fluent in Dutch. I did a year of French at high school, and I just went to France and pretended I could speak French. And what I found is, because I attempt to speak French and I don't encourage them to speak English, that as the years have gone on, my French has improved a lot, particularly in relation to the particular area in which I'm interested, which is textiles. But also I find, because it's in textiles and people are interested in learning, they're willing to be accommodating to your grammatical mistakes. They just want to learn.
In another dimension to your creative work, as a member of a writing group which I convene in Trafalgar Railway Station, with a bit of background noise, called Time to Write, our group, and you in that give really interesting insights into this question of your own Dutch background and your migrant experience. I'd like you to please tell our listeners a little bit about that family origin and how it's affected you creatively.
So my parents emigrated to Australia in 1965 when I was 9 years old, and I can tell you now, I hated my parents at that point of my life. They had promised me speed skates, and at that time Art Schenk was the world champion speed skater. And the fact that they were emigrating made me so angry, because every child in my town where this Art Schenk came from wanted to be a speed skater. So I was absolutely disgusted that they were going to a hot place, and we ended up in Bonegilla. My dad was a manager on a farm, so a reasonably affluent kind of background. So we ended up in Bonegilla, and my mum cried for 2 weeks solid. My dad looked for the first job out of there, and there was another young Dutch family, and they applied for jobs at North Yathong Station, and the station is actually a really large farm. It was 63,000 acres, and we'd come from 40 acres in the Netherlands. So it was a bit of a culture shock, and it was 18 miles out of town. We had no car, and there were farmers' cottages on this station. It was all culture shock, because we didn't speak any English at all. We only spoke Dutch. And so the first year I went to primary school was trying to learn English and reading in English and all of that kind of stuff. And it was a fairly prickly experience. I got teased a lot. I was one of only 3 migrant children at the school. The other 2 were Greek children from the fish and chip shops in town. And so it was, I would say, a prickly experience. And I tried to encapsulate that in the work I did for my master's, which I did in textiles, about immigration. But I actually then sort of discovered that the story of immigration within my family was much larger than this small kernel of my family unit going to Australia. It was, there was French Huguenot history and lots of other history. And so I developed a series of lace that traced from the first trace that I could find of the family name to the current time. And I used lace as the vehicle to do that, and I created modern lace.
Rodney and I, along with Paul, our producer, are strong supporters of Cheryl Cook. Could you tell us about your collaborations with Cheryl including travelling internationally together.
Okay, so Cheryl and I met in a screen printing workshop at Arc Yanar, and we had a mutual interest in printing, obviously, and Cheryl had told me that she was making natural inks. So I went up to her studio and was a bit gobsmacked by the amount of natural ink she'd made. And then shortly thereafter, she'd been approached by the Edward Hunter Reserve to create this installation. So even though I was not privy to her discussions with the committee, I was privy to her developing her ideas around how she was going to create that work for that particular installation and the experiments that she did. And I was in awe, and I actually think it's worthy of a book, because I thought it was an incredible interaction of a reserve with an artist to create something that came from within the reserve.
And changed.
It yes. didn't deteriorate. Like
it transformed.
It transformed, and it was a really yeah. fascinating process.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I was cheering her on from the sidelines, and we found that we had a mutual respect for each other's knowledge of certain areas, and also that we were really good at geeing each other on. It was a really great experience, and then I thought, well, you know, she'd never been to Europe, why don't you come to Europe with me and experience some of that? And so she agreed to come, and we travelled. We didn't kill each other, which is a really good thing when you're travelling. And we're both really passionate about these inks that Cheryl created, and we're constantly boiling up things because we're finding it's different at my place compared to her place.
Wow.
It was different in Europe because we did a lot of experimenting there, seeing what happened when we boiled up things. And we'd find, for example, locut, which I've got in my garden, Cheryl's got in her garden, and one of the places we went to in Italy, in Milan, they had a locut tree, three different colours from the same tree, different time of year, different soil. And like there's this whole kind of world of knowledge that's contained within creating those inks. And I really think Cheryl should write that book about the Edward Hunter Reserve experience, because that was fascinating to watch. And she's actually got them on exhibit in the Gathered Threads this time. And it's been really great to tell that story of how they've changed and how they've acquired an extra kind of dimension, because they did spend that year out there and they didn't disintegrate like you might have expected textiles to, which shows how durable textiles are. And then people say to us, well, you know, did the colours fade with the natural inks? And we go, look at that work. It's acquired colour. It's changed. It's just a wonderful experience to collaborate with Cheryl.
Moving back to writing again, if I may, we've got a collaboration between us in relation to catchment. The poetry journal that I edit for the Arts Alliance. You've written a piece for us about the Crinigan Road Bushland Reserve near where you live down in Morwell. Could you tell us about your creative connection with a special sense of place like that, given that catchment is about poetry of place?
Okay, so I moved to Morwell just before the pandemic, didn't know a soul, didn't know anyone in this region, and so I was supposed to go overseas, and that didn't happen because of the pandemic. And I had a house sitter Canadian who told me about the Crinigan Bushland Reserve. So during the pandemic, I started walking there, and I found it became this kind of saviour of my sanity to some extent, to be able to get out and walk every day. And then because I was doing it every day, you notice the little changes and all the little things that happened and all the animals that lived there and all the things that were growing there. And you know, it was just around the corner from my house. So where I'd lived previously, I'd had an outlook on the bush and I had a hill behind me, which I missed incredibly when I moved to Morwell. But then I found the Crinigan Bushland and it was like, oh, here's another bit of bush that I can enjoy, and it was accessible. And so I really started recording things about what I found interesting about the place. Firstly in writing, and then I've translated that into some work as I've started working with the natural inks. And it's become like an amalgamation of a couple of things which It gives a real sense of that place, and really passionate about those kind of places, that they are accessible to local people. Lots of people in Mormal don't even know about it. It's same with Edward Hunter. These remarkable places, almost in the middle of towns, that are just like you can go for a walk and just lose yourself for a couple of hours.
So thanks so much for talking with us, and best of luck with all your future endeavours. Thanks so much, Diane.
Thank you.